In our last episode, we looked at three work streams in our mortality reduction program. On this episode, we'll address the fourth, which is palliative and hospice care. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, Principal in Operations and Quality at Vizient and Practicing Internist. I welcome back Dr. Aman Sabharwal. Aman, glad you can join us again.
Great. I'm glad to be back.
So let's talk about hospice or even palliative care. Obviously, two completely different things. But what are we seeing in many organizations, particularly large AMCs, when it comes about their palliative care program?
You know, Tom, there's still a lot of hesitancy for leveraging palliative care in hospice. It's shocking to me how much we still have resistance to the acceptance and the adoption of these two service lines. I remember when I was working at Jackson Health System a little over 10, 12 years ago, I launched the very first palliative care service and we launched the very first palliative care unit there. And we did meet a lot of significant resistance from the medical staff in adopting that service about 12 years ago. And today there, it's a very valuable service. And as I work with academic medical centers around the country, I still see that either there's no palliative care service, or if there is, it's very underutilized. We're not engaging families and patients early on in chronic disease. And there is significant hesitation to even utilize hospice services.
You know, it's interesting because we can use our predictive analytics using the clinical database, and we can actually even break down the information by service line on utilization of palliative care or even hospice care. And I think you and I see some areas of consistency in certain service lines, oncology being mostly always the case. But I think you and I have actually seen this with some of the surgical subspecialties as well.
Yeah, I don't think any subspecialty is a high acceptor, so to speak, of this. I think it varies from organization to organization. But you're right, within the clinical database, we can look at by service line, by DRG, by physician, whether we're using palliative care, whether we're using hospice, and even whether we have a DNR order on the patient as well. So that analytic will really help us as we work with organizations figure out where should we focus education, because it really is all about education. Physicians are not comfortable with end-of-life care because they haven't been educated on processes that we have today in place to work with patients and families on these topics.
I'm often fascinated how the variability also occurs around the nation on who owns getting the advanced directive. So I've been to locations where they say, well, the advanced directive really is on the onus of primary care. Well, I can certainly see that. But then there's others where it's pastoral care services that has the responsibility, but they're not allowed in certain parts of the hospital. Really, no one owns the advanced directive component. And then lots of times it's been actually fallen on nursing. And I don't believe that they've gotten the appropriate training to have that kind of discussion. Any thoughts behind that?
Yeah, it's everybody's responsibility.
Absolutely.
And as a hospitalist, I think that we need to be on the forefront of it and really try to take as much ownership over that process as possible. And it goes back to what I mentioned in, I think, one of the earlier podcasts, Tom. As hospital medicine physicians, we need to be co-managing a lot of these cases, and we need to start taking a little bit more on our shoulders for owning the advanced directive process.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So in many of our organizations, particularly the larger AMCs, we see that they have a very broad palliative care program where more emphasis is being placed on the treatment of chronic disease symptom management. And that's exactly what palliative care is all about. But very little resources are being done in recognizing patients early on that have a high probability of dying during that hospitalization. Well, what do you think that's the case?
You know, Tom, that's a really good question, and I'm going to turn that back around on you and ask you that question. Since you're the board-certified palliative care physician, I'd love to hear your opinion on that.
There's very little onus on using some type of mortality score. Many of our academic medical centers are of the opinion that they need to try everything first. So they're not actually getting that palliative consult to when pretty much futile care is being offered or they have nothing else to offer itself. I think that there is an opportunity to come up with a mortality score. That way we can quantify our decisions and probably even be a trigger. I'm very impressed for an institution that we have that the largest referral to the palliative care program is actually the emergency room physicians. And I think that they are a great way of triaging. It's very common that our emergency room physicians are immensely capable of determining, and there's actually some data, observational data behind this, of determining who's going to most likely die within the first 24 to 48 hours, and who better to actually trigger those palliative care consults than them. And I think that that's actually a great way to start.
Yeah, and I think some organizations too, Tom, social work can trigger the consult, nursing can trigger the consult. And again, I think it goes state by state, it's different, and medical staff bylaws are different everywhere. But I think allowing more of our healthcare providers and our provider network to consult palliative care, I think the better we'll have adoption with the services.
Also, I think it's important to realize for all our listeners that once a patient goes into hospice, then they no longer fall within your mortality score.
You are absolutely 100% correct on that. Once you discharge a patient from acute care and admit them to hospice, it no longer hits the mortality index. And a lot of organizations have done this right, and a lot of them still struggle with this because it is an administrative task, an administrative duty to actually discharge a patient and readmit them, even if it's still within the four walls of your organization.
Another area that we look at is mortality review, and we see that there's also a huge variability, sometimes even just being service line specific. What are some things that you've seen that are opportunities for mortality review around the country?
So best practice is really to review all mortalities within your organization. And it's not about reviewing them from a punitive standpoint.
Right.
It's about reviewing them from a standpoint of, are there system issues that we can address to prevent these types of mortalities from occurring going forward in the future? Again, it's not about the clinical care that was provided at the bedside. It's not about the physician or the provider. It's about the system. So as we review the mortalities, most organizations are reviewing them as a checkbox, mm-hmm. and then moving on to the next thing that they have to do in their day-to-day job. But I think it's very important that when we review mortalities and we identify and uncover system issues that may have contributed, we need to take action on that. We need to have some sort of process improvement around that to make sure that we're preventing those types of system issues from occurring in the future. So again, mortality review process is not meant to be a punitive action. It's not meant to be a punitive function. It's meant to be a corrective action going forward to make our health systems safer places for our patients.
Couldn't agree with you more. Lots of times it is peer review, and that should not be the case. We need to use real performance improvement activity to not only reduce harm, but improve care. And in one of those areas is that we see that you have active rapid response teams. And yeah, sure, they have a log, but you're not using real performance improvement activity to try to find better ways to engage or recognize patients that are decompensating, particularly those patients that need to go to a higher level of care, actually detecting deterioration quicker.
You made a really good comment about rapid responses. And anytime a rapid response or a code is triggered in the organization, we should be reviewing those as well. Not every organization is reviewing rapid response and code activities, but that's part of the mortality review process, in my opinion, is that we're looking at all of those aspects to make determinations of how we can do things better, how we can provide safer care, how we can improve on various aspects, whether it's a process using standard work or we implement some process improvement activities. But we have to take a look at all three of those areas.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank my colleague, Dr. Aman Sabharwal, for joining us. And if you'd like to contact Aman, we put his email address in the resource section in our podcast page. And if you have any additional questions pertaining to modern practice or simply want to send your comments, please contact me at our email at modernpracticepodcast.com. We posted a link in our resource sections. And please join me for other Modern Practice Podcasts. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thank you so much for listening.